This is a new live son of a bitch.
Bull frickin' horse shit.
I hate to go all technical on you, but all hands on deck, swirly thing alert.
Attention.
Listen, you motherfuckers.
Buckle up, pedal heads.
You're experiencing the Lotus Effect with Phoenix and Phone Boy.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
You are my podcast, my only podcast. So if you fucking take my podcast away, I'm going to shove my foot so far up your ass.
It is out of sheer morbid curiosity I'm allowing this freak show to continue.
How do you fix that, though?
Take a big step back and literally
suck my dick.
Are you interested? I know you are, because it's fuck or walk.
You're shitting me.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
To tell you the truth, I don't give a shit.
Well, you know who else doesn't give a shit?
Phoenix and Phone Boy?
Ah, not them again!
Oh, they're horrible.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah, we have no idea what the fuck you're talking about. Hell, we don't even know what we're fucking talking about. But we do know this is episode 198 of The Lotus Effect, provisionally titled Dueling Meatloafs, on behalf of a conversation that Bemlet and I had over meatloaf. And it may or may not, I can neither confirm nor deny, be tonight's dinner. But, yeah, you know how it goes. The show's made up. The content doesn't matter. And, you know, I am definitely...
It's your fucking nightmare!
That's right, the opinionated Uber driver, Phoenix.
You make a mad dream come true.
I'm Phone Boy. So, yeah, I mean, yeah. Hey, somebody else's nightmare is somebody else's dream. Who knows?
Well, that's kind of like one man's trash is another man's treasure.
Yeah. Well, and we...
And
we,
I don't think there's a...
And by the way, we treasure the few people that are subscribing to us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
We definitely do. Yeah. And I was going to say on that note that today is actually my ex's birthday. Speaking of, you know, one man's trash is another man's treasure. But anyway, yeah, don't freak out. We're not going down that road.
What is this, a freak out?
This is kind of strange.
This is terrific.
I think I'm going to be sick.
Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell aglowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes! The danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing!
I just had an orgasm.
The guy is jizzing all over himself.
I'm freaking out, man.
You are freaking out, man.
Yeah, you may be freaking out, but don't worry. We know that the Lotus affects everyone differently. So however and wherever the Lotus is affecting you today, we would love to hear about it.
I got mail! Yay!
I got you $1.
You know, we put a bunch of time into doing this shit show that we call The Lotus Effect, and we run on the value-for-value model of time, talent, and treasure. So the way that you can send us treasure, because it is the least important to us, is to go to lotuseffect.show, click the green We Like Money button, and you can send us some cash via PayPal or Cash App. You can use the cash tag $TheLotusEffect33. You can also visit our merch store, lotuseffect.shop. You can buy the crap that has our brand feces smeared all over it, or you can make a one-time or recurring donation on that site. Although, I don't know why you would when there's, you know, the green We Like Money button and it works a lot better. And anyways, I'm not going to go down that road. However, I will say we are working on getting some merch for 2.5 Bens on the site for you nerds out there who would just love to show the world that you listen to one of the most entertaining tech podcasts there is on.
That's right.
Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever platforms you listen to podcasts on, I would imagine we're on them too.
Yeah. Well, so, okay, we're not on YouTube, but that's a different...
That's a whole nother story we're not even going to cover. But we are going to talk about the person who is the executive producer this week.
Oh, you the executive producer.
That would be Cotton Gin because he has a $5 monthly donation. We appreciate you, Cotton Gin, for all that you do. We appreciate you for Isobutt. We appreciate your snark and I think you're vying with Sir Bemrose for the head troll position here.
I truly think that is an honest and complete fact, especially after last night in Sir Bemrose's absence, because, you know, he was doing that thing called, oh, I don't know, celebrating with family and friends or some bullshit. I don't know. I heard something about getting older.
Disc golf. I think there was disc golf involved.
I believe there was.
Yeah, something along those lines.
But irrelevant to the fact, we know that y'all do not all have the scratch to send us, and that's cool. Like we said, the money is not the big thing for us. But because we do want to, you know, get some value back for the time that we put into this, let us know that you're listening. We call it sending the ACK back. It only takes a minute or two, and there's a few ways that you can do it. First, subscribe to the podcast in your favorite podcast app. That lets us know definitively that there's somebody out there sending the ACK back, that you're hearing the bullshit we're spouting.
Yeah, rate and review us also, right? So, you know, say a couple of words, you know, to help, you know, I don't know. Yeah, just, you know, yeah, let us know. Yeah, let us know you're out there, folks.
Exactly, because we really want to know. And of course, if you are in the inner circle, outer circle, or if you've ever heard of this giant dong,
Master Dong!
That's right. Do what I do and jump on the dong. Send us a message. Our handles are phoneboy@lotuseffect.social. And of course, I am Phoenix, PHEONIX, @lotuseffect.social. You can, of course, send us an email. I don't give a fuck @lotuseffect.show. Real email, really monitored by myself. And you can also send us something to keep the uniformed member of the federal government employed with all the Trump bullshit that's going on. So send us something physically. If you want the address, we'll be glad to provide it for you in the back channel. And then there's this thing. You hear us interacting during the show. And pretty much anytime we're on mic, it's the chat. Join us there sometime. We do Rideshare Radio or 2.5 Bends, depending on which week it is, starting at 9 p.m. Eastern on Fridays, 8 Central, or this shit show you're putting in yours right now that's live at round about 4 to 4:20 or whenever the fuck we get on the mic after 4 p.m. But we start coming all over the place around 4:30 Eastern, 3:30 Central. And after we're done spitting in the mic doing this, we have Studio 33, which we absolutely love doing. If you've never heard of it, if you've never joined us, well, today is the day. Make it happen. Come jam with us. Request a song. Tell us you love us. Tell us you hate us. Just reach out. Let us know. Go to lotuseffect.chat, and all the details are there on how to do that. Or the other way you can get at us is call or text 253-237-3321.
One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingy.
Dell Computers, this is Chip.
I'm sorry, sir, but that line is boozy.
Yeah, that line is very boozy because Google Voice answers it, and that bitch is always plastered. And she mangles transcripts horribly, which of course then become show titles, so it's not that bad. It's kind of a give and take. So when you do call in, give us whatever feedback you'd like. Like I said, tell us if you like the show, tell us if you hate the show. Tell us whatever you want. You can tell us about some kind of weird fetish you have. Like, just call 253-237-3321 and reach out. Let us know you're out there. Now, of course, the whole reason why we set this up is because we want to hear from you. We call it the weigh-in segment. And we have a topic every week that we ask you. This week, what we want to know is, what is that go-to cuisine when you're having one of those days? Very simple. Reach out. 253-237-3321. I think we've explained ourselves, phone boy.
Yes, and so we'll take it from Dr. Johnny Fever.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide, and say, "Give it to me straight, Doctor. I can take it."
Hey, by the way, this is a warning to the trolls in the room.
We don't want your shit.
Please don't send us your shit.
You know, but you know what we mean by that. We're good natured, yeah. but
respectful.
But don't be a dick.
Don't be an idiot.
Yeah, that's the basic idea. All right.
Exactly.
I think
it's not illegal yet.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think we need to be wished good luck by Leslie Nielsen because we can't do that because we can't start until we do that.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
Yeah, they're probably counting on us to be completely insane, which we deliver week after week. And we also do not ever, ever, ever allow our health segment to be
brought to you by Pfizer.
Because fuck Pfizer.
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay, so this week is something I haven't seen an article on in the wild. Is turning your phone to red light the secret to better sleep?
You need to sleep. We found that less than 8 hours of sleep a night increases your hunger hormones and drives you to overeat.
Yeah, so now if you're looking for some way to make doom scrolling less appealing and in turn improve your sleep quality, there's a hack for that. Anyway, it turns out that using a filter in your phone settings to turn your screen red can reduce the blue light that keeps you up at night while also making the visuals you see lose their luster. Now, we all know we should avoid bright light before bed, but it turns out that some colors of light may disrupt your sleep more than others. I mean, well, okay, first of all, using your phone at bedtime, I mean, we all do this, right? Maybe not everybody. Maybe Sir Bemrose keeps his in a drawer until he needs it. But some of us have phones and some of us have more than, you know. But it's like, yeah, it's the last thing I want to do is pick up my phone when I'm trying to sleep or even getting that close to sleep. It's you know, so the only winning move is to maybe not have it at all. But, you know, this is like trying to wean you off of like the fucking doom scrolling and shit. But I don't know. But OK, so let's get into some more of this. What this article says. So melatonin is a hormone that largely controls your body's natural sleep-wake cycles. Specialized photoreceptors in your eyes send information back to your brain and influence your production of melatonin. So the research review has found that these receptors are most sensitive to light with wavelengths around 450 to 480 nanometers. Now, to most people, this light appears blue. Now, there's still a limited amount of research looking at the effects of other light colors on our sleep cycles. However, there's some evidence that warm colors, like the colors we see at sunset, may help lull you to sleep more quickly than cool colors. Now, I remember the days when they were talking about this on desktop computers, not smartphones. So what we've now invited the problem into our bedroom. Nice execution, doing terrific at you all. And in fact, because of this, Mac OS and Windows both have features built into them. Based on a schedule, changes the color settings to be more red and less blue. And then before that, we had to use an open source utility called Flux to do it. And it still exists, by the way. Now the experts in this article suggest that this has helped patients who doom scroll at night, particularly with more visual mediums like Instagram, because it changes how colors are rendered on the screen. It makes it less appealing. And I've used this feature before, and it does do that, but I find that just not consuming the social media at all is also helpful to my sleep, because if I'm looking at
it's very simple. Don't bring your phone into the bedroom.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, maybe a better idea is to stop using social media or just entirely. Now, this did remind me that I probably should go turn the setting back on, because I do pick up my phone at night sometimes and it's usually for something very specific. I don't want to sit there and doom scroll, right? But the point is that, yeah, I've actually done a lot of other things to improve my sleep. There's, having the chargers and stuff next to your bed, that especially if they're like wireless chargers, and I can actually hear I can hear the charging occur. And it's kind of like I've been kind of realizing that all this stuff is, you know, maybe I don't need all of this stuff like right at my head. And in fact, we're even talking about like, you know, even just like the air purifier.
I'm still convinced you could hear a flea fart.
Yeah, I probably could. But the point is that, yeah, those things, I don't need those things. There's probably lots of other things that affect you. Maybe not having all of the electronics next to your bed is probably a much better idea, whatever it is, right? And yeah, playing with them at night. But it's like, okay, this is like, you know, the real issue is, yeah, we probably shouldn't be looking at our phones at night, period, dot. If you have one, if you ever pull it out of your drawer, you probably shouldn't be looking at it when you're about ready to go to bed. That probably will help your sleep more than it being red light or whatever. Just don't fucking use it at all.
Well, it's also, this is not a new problem. Televisions, this is the new television problem, basically. Having televisions in the bedroom. Same exact problem.
Yeah.
Is people were not sleeping because they were reliant on the television to be on once they put it. Just, it's disgusting. My kids actually wanted to have a TV in their room, and I was like, absolutely not. At some point, it was like, no, I'm just not playing this game. You're not going to sleep. You're just going to fucking stay up all night watching television. I'm not dumb.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's the same thing. And now we've just invited, you know, not only did we, you know, we did it kind of right the first time with the telescreen, but we didn't realize what we were bringing into the room was also a telescreen. So, you know, do we need to have telescreens in our bedroom? Probably not.
Well, here's the problem. They didn't used to could be, you know, remember back in the days when a phone actually flipped open, didn't have access to the internet, only made phone calls and maybe texted by hitting, you know, 333-441-122, like, fuck me. You do remember back when we had to text by
T9 is what that's called, honey. And yes, I'm
fuck you. That's all I'm saying.
Fuck you.
Okay.
Text-plaining me. You couldn't help yourself.
Yeah. So
no, I'm just kidding.
All right.
I actually did not know that. In fairness, again, you remember that I didn't.
Yes,
when I met you,
yeah,
I
you
could
barely knew
work
how to
my
work your smartphone,
smartphone
when I first met you.
So,
okay, so
you
having said that, I think you can take this next story because you've learned about this a little bit since we've been together.
I another thing I've learned about, that's right, because yes, there is an ideal length for intermittent fasting, and it's surprisingly reasonable.
You know, you got to understand that fasting is sort of a part of the normal life. Like, that's where the word breakfast comes in. You're supposed to feed, then you're supposed to fast. And it's like, right. What's wrong with that, right? You have a word that tells you that it's actually part of your daily schedule. And now, you know, fasting for 12 hours is like insane. It's like, you know that everybody in the 70s did it.
Right.
Like, without even thinking about it. So it's sort of come all the way around that, oh, you shouldn't even go like more than 2 hours without eating. It's like, okay, well, what about, you know, the normal nightly fast, right?
So much like anything else in the media, intermittent fasting has been hated or hailed, depending on what day of the week and the phase of the moon it's in. Given the number of religions that incorporate some level of fasting as part of their doctrine, not to mention the fact we didn't have any grocery stores until modern civilization, we would not be having this discussion right now because we'd be dead if intermittent fasting was harmful to us. Granted, we all have to eat eventually, but experts say you can go a few weeks, yeah, that's right, weeks, without eating. So what's the big deal anyway? Of course, it's worth pointing out that fasting isn't a miracle on its own. What's most important, regardless of your fasting schedule, according to the experts, is pairing time-restricted eating with quality proteins, healthy fats, and a whole food, high-fiber diet, and mindful habits. Just make sure that fiber doesn't come from grains, y'all, or anything with sugar, you know?
And actually, this was good. I think this is just, I actually thought it was, even though it was mainstream advice, it actually, it's like, yeah. As long as you're not like, you know, fucking pounding the grains, right? Or having the grains, yeah, that all the rest of that advice actually seems very, very familiar. And honestly, you know, I used to do this like when I was before you and I got together and when I was posting the running nipple pics back in the day, right?
Yeah. I miss those.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, yeah, for me, right? I mean, a 16-8 fasting, you know, I mean, yeah, that's, I mean, I've done the article, and actually the article even suggested this as 16-8 fast, and I've done this, right? So, I do like one meal a day, kind of a similar idea, right? And the idea being, yeah, and it actually does, I can say it works, you know, that it helps, you know, if you can, you know, again, you just have to find something that's sustainable for yourself. But
that's actually really fantastic advice. Now, what a 16-8 fast means is in an 8-hour window, you are only, that's the only window you're allowed to eat is during that 8 hours. The other 16, you fast. And by fasting, we mean water, tea, or coffee without cream or sugar. A 16-hour fasting window is often the most realistic and evidence-based approach for adults. It's long enough to improve insulin sensitivity, reduce late-night eating, and support weight management, but short enough to sustain long-term. Now, research shows that an 8-hour eating window leads to a moderate amount of weight loss, and people tend to stick with it. The 16-hour fast gives the body time to reset without pushing people into overly restrictive eating patterns, which are less sustainable. If you're new to intermittent fasting, it can take getting used to. Try to keep to a consistent fasting eating schedule, according to the experts. They suggest drinking plenty of water. Sip on hot beverages, including calorie-free tea or coffee. Okay, so hold on. I didn't know that tea or coffee had calories to begin. Oh, wait. I think coffee has, what, 10 calories natively?
Well, no, but I mean, yeah, but no, it's just, yeah, there's not enough. Calorie-free meaning without additional things in it. So just
So like the no cream and sugar situation.
Yeah, that's pretty
got
much
you.
Yeah. I mean,
okay, so this last one makes me cringe. Chew sugar-free gum. No, no, absolutely not. Do not fucking chew sugar-free gum. That shit has aspartame or whatever other artificial sweeteners give you the fucking Shiites. No, don't do it. How about no? Anyways, considering practically all gum has I love it. Phoneboy added a note in here, says, considering practically all gum has artificial sweeteners, we would recommend against that. I never read that prior to rant. I just want to point that out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is what's what happens here. So
that is how in tune we are. That is how real and serious we are about, do not put these things in your body. It's just automatic. As soon as we see these terms, our brain immediately goes into that reaction. Can't help it.
Yeah. So, all right. Now, something we now have in the modern world, thanks to thanks to consumerism and tech getting cheap and all of that. Some people wear noise canceling headphones all the time. Might doing that all the time damage your ears?
I can't hear you.
Yeah, noise-canceling headphones work by using microphones that listen to external sounds and using clever electronics and probably some AI algos and whatever else. These sounds are then canceled by playing an inverted wavelength to the listener, suppressing the audio signal to the eardrum. It's like how a vehicle's active suspension dampens out vibrations from a bumpy road. Now, the result for the listener is beautifully clear audio with very little audible background noise. And the headphones can even help protect ears from excessive volume. Less background noise means devices don't have to play their sounds so loud. So parents worldwide have been enthusiastically encouraging their children to wear them. Now, and I can tell you, because we just bought the new AirPods Pro that Apple released at their FAFFest. Yeah, the three, yes. They have better noise canceling. Yeah, they work pretty well. It's also nice to have a battery that works on the headphones that actually lasts more than a few hours now. So, anyway, so it sounds like a win-win. So everybody's got these things now, right? But now we started hearing about young people who are increasingly suffering from auditory processing disorder, or APD. Now, those individuals often struggle to understand sounds and spoken words with distracting background noise. I mean, I have that. I have that sometimes even without using...
Like everyone else in the fucking world prior to noise canceling technology?
Yeah, and understandably, yeah, but I mean I don't wear them anywhere, I don't use the noise canceling on them all that much.
I mean, I'm sorry to make the point, but ever tried to yell over a fucking jackhammer on a construction site?
Yeah.
Or even more realistically, you're in a classroom waiting for the teacher to come in, everybody's talking, and you're trying to talk to the person next to you. You've got to practically be like mouth to ear to hear what that person is saying. Yeah. So help me again to understand how that very statement of, oh, they struggle to understand sounds and spoken words with distracting background noises. No shit, Sherlock.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody does. What else is new?
I found that to be a ridiculous statement.
Now, I will say, so Kanjin in the chat is talking about the fact that active noise cancellation hurts his ears. And
I've actually heard of that, yeah.
And I will tell you, Kanjin, because when I've had to use these things for an extended period of time, yeah, I get a fatigue from wearing them for too long. So I'm kind of with you on that. The only time I really want to use them is if there's maybe a couple of times where I do want to use them as that thing. I only wear one AirPod most of the time. So that way it doesn't even kick in as far as I know unless I got both of them in there. But I don't spend time doing it precisely because, yeah, it fucking hurts.
Sir Bamrose points out in the chat, before active noise cancellation, when we wanted to be able to make out sounds, we would leave the loud room. I mean, great point.
Yes. We were having this discussion behind the mic, even though it is that tech creates problems and the solution. It's kind of like the pharma industry. But
Yeah. Oh, did you say that out loud? I think you did.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, okay, so the case has been, okay, the cause has been linked to the massive increase in young people using noise-canceling headphones, often combined with subtitles when watching videos. And instead of their brains developing normally and learning to filter out the noisy world we live in, or, I don't know, being fucking present in the world that we live in, they never give their gray matter a chance to wire itself up appropriately because they wear their noise-canceling headphones constantly for hours wherever they go. Yeah.
Hold up. Wait. Fuck! The statement about the subtitles, and I know you don't watch a lot of YouTube videos, so I'm going to step up as the expert here.
Oh, I've seen my share of
these fucking subtitles, because they're done by AI, are the most inaccurate shit I have ever seen. You want to know why your kids don't fucking know how to speak? It's because they're reading these subtitles, watching the mouth movements, and thinking that's how you talk. Fucking idiots.
Well, all right. So our brains are like muscles. They develop in response to their environment. Cycle 100 miles a day and you'll have superhero thighs but skinny arms. Hear nothing but pure audio without any background noise and you'll have a brain that can't process multiple sounds at once. Now, auditory therapy can help retrain the brain, but the best solution is to listen to the world around us a little more before it becomes a problem. Now, it's already a problem. The fact that we're having this discussion means it already has become a problem. Put your goddamn phone down. You're out in the world. There's a lot of shit going on. Pay the fuck attention.
We have had that conversation so many times about how important it is to be present because it takes only one slip and shit goes to hell, like we were talking about. You know, you've got your head in your headphones and you're not listening to the outside world, and somebody not paying attention because they're on their fondle slab driving, you could be taken out because you didn't hear the car coming and the person driving it didn't see you step out into traffic. So now one person has killed someone and one person is dead. That equation does not equal something that we want to see here at the Lotus Effect. Now, something we might want to see, however, is the result of feeding blueberries to babies because it might reduce allergy symptoms and improve gut health.
It happens every time. They all become blueberries.
So feeding blueberries to babies may reduce allergy symptoms and improve their gut health, according to new research. The groundbreaking clinical trial shows consuming the fruit early in life can improve immunity and support long-term health. Feeding blueberries to babies as one of their first solid foods may help strengthen their immune system, reduce allergy symptoms, and support healthy gut development, according to scientists at the University of Colorado. To safely introduce the superfood to young infants, the research team recommends pureeing them. Yeah, and okay, I'm going to say this, and y'all are probably going to cringe when I do. You got to sweeten it just a little bit, y'all. I know you'll hardly ever, never hear me say that, but if you're going to give a baby blueberries, real, honest to God blueberries, those things are tart AF. No. Put a little sweet. Help the kid out. I'm not talking about load it down. Just take that bite off.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, a little bit. But yeah, I mean, my kids used to love blueberries, so.
Blueberries are friggin' amazing. You know, superfood for the win. But, you know, for babies, I don't know. But for older babies and toddlers, they say blueberries should be mashed or cut up into small pieces to eliminate choking hazards. I think that's a great idea. The study published in the journal Frontier in Nutrition is the first of its kind to rigorously test the effects of a specific food on infant health using a randomized placebo-controlled clinical trial. Hold on a fucking second. How do you create a blueberry placebo? And please write that down.
Yeah, well, read the rest of the story, honey.
I'm sorry. The initial thought on that, because that's the whole point of this, is when doing the stories, you're getting the real reaction of what the f-. But anyway, so for parents beginning to wean their infants, it's incredibly difficult to find solid research-backed advice on what foods to introduce. According to the study's senior author, Professor Minghao Tang from the University of Colorado in Anschutz? I read that as Auschwitz. I'm not going to lie. And I knew it wasn't, so I stopped. So this study is a critical first step in filling that gap by offering real data on how a specific food like blueberries can improve your infant's health. The researchers followed 61 babies in the Denver area from 5 to 12 months of age. Each day, participants consumed either freeze-dried blueberry powder or a placebo powder with no blueberries. So these weren't even fresh blueberries. Where were they grown in relation to the convenience sample they used for this study? Oh, wait, they don't tell you that. So parents were free to feed their children as they normally would, simply adding the powder to their daily routine. The research team collected stool and blood samples every 2 months to monitor changes in the infant's gut bacteria, immune system biomarkers, and allergy-related outcomes. They also tracked growth and dietary habits. Key findings included improved allergy symptoms in babies who consumed blueberry powder, reduced inflammation and signs of a stronger immune response, and positive shifts in gut microbiota, which changes considered beneficial for immune health. That is interesting and also a little concerning. The freeze-dried blueberry things got me completely...
It's not real blueberries, which is what you would fucking eat.
Yeah, and, well, my question is this, okay? If you know how freeze-drying works, I'm not going to say they're not real blueberries, but I'm wondering how the freeze-drying affects the nutrient content.
Yeah, I agree.
That's a question that I have in this.
Yeah, I agree as well.
And how are you... Okay, so here's the problem I have, okay? If you're being given a placebo powder that doesn't have any blueberries in it, what did you do? Use artificial flavoring to make it taste like blueberry so you knew it was, or so you didn't know it was a placebo? Too many holes. This is a Swiss cheese story.
Yeah, it probably is. Well, you know, I'm happy you identified that, and maybe we should get happy together. What do you think?
Let's do it.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
Fuck you. All right. Now, this is the In my quest to find a fucking barber shop around here that I don't hate, we have found a story about a very diligent barber that may have saved a boy's life after spotting a cancerous lump on his neck.
You might die.
Fucking Roger Rabbit for the win, Christopher Lloyd and all of that. All right. An eagle-eyed barber saved a teenager's life by spotting a lump that turned out to be a rare cancer. A Turkish stylist named Ferhat spied it on the 17-year-old's neck after he'd come in for a trim of his back and sides. He advised him to get it checked out. And the next week, Owen went to his doctor who referred him to a specialist. Following a series of tests, Owen was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, an uncommon cancer that develops in the lymphatic system, and he immediately started aggressive chemotherapy following the diagnosis in January. Owen Norgrove from Shropshire, England, is now in remission and is hoping to be given the all-clear next June. Owen's had just gone for his normal haircut, and Ferhat noticed the tiny lump on his neck, his mother Haley told SWNS News Agency. When Owen came home, he told us what Ferhat had advised, and we immediately got him an appointment with his GP. Once he saw it, it did start to grow, and by the time he was diagnosed, it was a sizable lump in his neck. Ferhat really helped Owen have the cancer diagnosed much quicker so he could start treatment sooner. He underwent 5 months of chemotherapy at Royal Shrewsbury Hospital and is being supported by the Teenage Cancer Trust. He had just had his last chemo on May 1st, and then in early June, he was in remission. You just don't expect cancer at that age, and it was a shock for everyone, but everyone rallied around, and we had a strong support network, and with his age and resilience, his body fought back, and this week, Owen was reunited with Ferhat for the first time since he took the barber's life-saving advice. Recalling the day he had his trim, Owen said, "I came to the barber as I do every few weeks. Suddenly, Ferhat stopped and said to me, 'Do you realize you've got a lump on your neck? You might want to get that checked by a doctor.' I'm really grateful that the barber noticed the lump," he said recently. Now, Ferhat, who runs the New Styles Hair Salon, said, "I'm giving him a haircut, and I saw that his neck, the right side of it, is swelling. I asked, what was it? He said, 'I don't know,' and I got the mirror. And he said he hadn't seen it before, and I told him, 'Mate, you should go see the doctor.' He came with his dad 5 months later, and I didn't remember him because he had chemotherapy and had no hair. His dad told me the story, and I feel emotional. He's all right now, and that's what's important now. And I hope I hope he's going to have a long life, healthy, and he's never going to see the hospital and the doctors again. I can't agree more with that sentiment. I mean, seriously, like, you know.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And I'm glad. I mean, there's still good people in the world. You know, we'd like to highlight.
And smart. Like, yes. A barber being like, hey, dude, that don't look right.
Yeah, exactly.
Way to go.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a great story. And by the way, this is a great story, too, that you've got here.
Yeah, I can't wait for this one because in prisons across Ohio, inmates are finding meaning by saving orphaned and injured animals. In Ohio, across multiple state correctional facilities, inmates are rehabilitating themselves by rehabilitating others, specifically the most fragile and vulnerable of others, injured and orphaned animals, tiny birds, victims of a fall from the nest. You know, I've always, like, found that weird, that, like, mom birds are just so cruel. They're just like, get the fuck out of here. Like, how... That's just fucked up.
Yeah, but that's nature for you, though.
No, I get that. It's just like I recently saw a bat story about something similar to that, where there was a bat or something. No. I don't know what it was. It was the crow story we did with the dog last week,
right?
Where like the mother rejected the bird and shit, so right. You know they ended up saving it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Yeah, exactly.
So, tiny birds, you know, that fall from the nest, baby rabbits orphaned by the wheels of a Ford, or little possums lost when their mothers took off at the first sign of danger. They all need a helping hand and careful attention if they're going to make it back to the woods or the fields. At Marion and Richland Correctional Institutions and the Ohio Reformatory for Women, that is such an obscene name. Oh my God. That just conjures horrible images. A reformatory. I hate that word. Anyways, the Ohio Wildlife Center trains interested inmates on how to feed and care for wounded or abandoned wild animals. Housed in special aviaries or even inside cages within prisoners' cells, it gives them someone to care for, and in doing so, perhaps it helps them care for themselves. That is a really great point, for sure. Now, between January and June at Marion, 284 animals were brought in for care, and Scott Fuqua, I would shoot my parents having that name, a correctional officer and the program coordinator, says that he wants it to be 1,000 by the year's end. Such is the impact it's had for the facility. The effect that this program has on the offenders here is quite remarkable, he told Smithsonian's Olivia Young. The men who participate in this program get a chance to care for something other than themselves, and you can see the changes in their behavior. They tend to stay out of trouble, away from substance abuse, have an increased interest to learn more about the animals they care for. They might include even someone like Tyree M., who's well into his third decade of a potential life sentence for murder. Tyree knows how to care for dozens of different species and situations. Some of these birds coming in, it crushes you to see them, he told Young, who visited the Marion Correctional Institute's makeshift wildlife rehabilitation center. Then to see one get stronger and the strength comes back in it. The life comes back in it. It's awesome. He was one of the first men who began the program after it started over 25 years ago, when the Ohio Wildlife Center, based in Columbus, under the direction of its late founder, began expanding the wildlife treatment and rehab volunteer centers into the state's criminal justice facilities. And we're just now hearing about this? Like, are you shitting?
Yeah, this is great stuff. I mean, I saw this story and I'm like, wow, this is the kind of stuff that I'm glad this kind of shit's going on in the world.
For real, for real. So it's the first stop. Its first stop was more believable, perhaps, than a medium or maximum security prison. In 1994, some of those incarcerated at the Ohio Reformatory for Women began receiving training on how to care for wildlife and have since helped rehabilitate thousands of orphaned animals under the guidance of the Ohio Wildlife Center. It's important to our women that their time spent with us is transformative and that it truly does help rehabilitate them, said Clara Golden Kent, public information officer for the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections. That's the beauty of this program. The animals and the inmates are both being rehabilitated. I grew up with animals, and the animals have always been a part of my life, inmate Amanda Sawyer said in 2019. The program helps us, and it helps the animals, so I look forward to it. The Ohio Wildlife Center's hospital treated some 9,000 animals from almost 200 different species throughout the year so far, and many of them will require additional rehab before release. The work is handled by volunteers. 70% of that is done in the prisons. Over 60 inmates at 5 correctional facilities have so far participated in the project, 52 of them at Marion, the only facility to take birds. The men suddenly have something to protect, their right to continue to see the injured animals and helping them. For one of the project's bannermen, Willie, bad behavior would not only mean losing the access to the program, but losing his pet cockatiel, who joins him on his morning feeding routines. See, that's awesome. I'm going to be real. Like, okay, I hate the fact that people are, like, doing fucked up shit and getting arrested. But at the same time, yeah, I think animals, if you can trust the inmate to care for the animal and not fucking kill it because they're a savage piece of shit. Yeah, animals are super important in helping people's mental stability and things like that. That's one of the main reasons why they have animals in God's waiting room, aka old age homes and rehab facilities like that, because they lift the spirits of the clients. And I mean, why not?
Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah, this is, I saw this. I'm like, yeah, this seems like a really positive thing that's occurring in the world. And I'd like to see more of that. I mean, it's like, if you can, yeah, if we can, you know, if, you know, instead of slave labor, maybe we, you know, we help them, you know, if they can help heal the world somehow, that would be great. I would, you know.
Well, it's, again, it's, you know, be the change you want to see. I think that this is a great program and I hope that it continues to be successful because Ohio's a pretty shitty place. Let's just be honest.
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyway, but you know what isn't shitty and what's really something that's cool, a cool institution here that we have. It's called the Cavalcade of Stupidity.
Yes, it is.
And we have something from Rev Cybertrekker. So take it away, Rev.
Hidey-ho, pedalheads, and welcome to Sir Reverend Cybertrekker's Cavalcade of Stupidity. Formed in the summer of 1993, Da Vinci's Notebook was a comedic a cappella singing group. Former artists in residence at the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts, they performed specials on Comedy Central and PBS, and spent time as the house band on Washington Radio's WBIG-FM. They were also regular guests on the nationally syndicated Bob and Tom Radio Show. Making their debut at the 1994 Mid-Atlantic Harmony Sweepstakes, where they came in third place, they returned in 1997. And won the competition. And in 1995, the group self-released their debut cassette, Somebody Else's Greatest Hits, featuring covers of popular songs. From the 2002 album Brontosaurus, this is Da Vinci's Notebook. The Gates.
Working on a laptop close to the end of a job I've been doing since 10:30. I don't believe that it's frozen again. The system has gone down, oh, down, oh, down, oh. I don't believe that it's frozen again. The system has gone down, oh. So I took it down to the help desk guy. I said, make it better or I'm gonna cry. He said, I'm sorry, your computer has died. The data can no longer be found, oh, found, oh, found, oh. He said, I'm sorry, your computer has died. The data can no longer be found, oh. To the roof with the laptop I did go. Over to the edge and I gave it a throw. And when it arrived 7 stories below, it really made a mighty fine sound, oh, sound, oh, sound, oh. When it arrived 7 stories below, it really made a mighty fine sound, oh. Well, that didn't do enough to ease my pain, so I went down to Dulles and I got on a plane, saying this is all Billy Gates' fault. I'm gonna be tracking him down, oh, down, oh, down, oh. This is all Billy Gates' fault. I'm gonna be tracking him down, oh. Touched down in Seattle and got off the plane. Hit Starbucks to get out of the rain. Paid all of my dough for a thimble of Joe, full of foam and the cinnamon brown. Oh, brown, oh, brown, oh. All of my dough for a thimble of Joe, full of foam and the cinnamon brown. Oh, when the Gates found out about my plan, he packed up a bag, turned tail and ran. Megaloman took it out on the lam and hid way underground. Oh, ground, oh, ground, oh. Megaloman took it out on the lam and hid way underground. Oh. Well, the Gate's been a-running ever since that day. Thinks he can hide, but he can't get away. When I finally find his little skinny behind, gonna kick it all over this town, oh. Town, oh, town, oh. Finally find his little skinny behind, gonna kick it all over this town.
That was a fantastic contribution. Thank you so much, Sir Rev Cybertrucker, for that cavalcade. That was absolutely unique. And I've actually heard of Da Vinci's Notebook. That's pretty awesome that you brought them this week. But what else is awesome is it's time to ride. Yeah, I do actually have a couple stories this week. I had a gentleman, very interesting, who actually covered and helped the, or not helped, but went to, I think they were the first reporters at the campsite in North Carolina where the Atlanta Olympic bomber had hidden out after he carried out his nefarious duties. So he was telling me about hiking up there because he, of course, you know, born and raised in the hills of Tennessee, you know, they're very familiar with how to get up, you know, in that area and stuff. And I guess it was a pretty big deal. I mean, I remember when there was the bombing, but because I don't really pay that close of attention to world events that I just frankly don't give a fuck about, the Olympics being one of them, that's why I didn't really know much about it. But I thought it was an interesting story to hear him talk about the guy and, you know, supposedly why he did it and whatnot, which, you know, my only comment that I could have when he mentioned something about a manifesto, I was just like, well, the only manifesto I really give a shit about is Professor Ted's because he was right. So what was interesting last night, I believe it was. Yes, because I worked well into the night. So I'm driving around and I love looking at the moon. It's one of my favorite things to do when it's late at night. And I said to Phone Boy, well, the moon looks really beautiful tonight. And then I proceeded to watch it disappear. And I don't mean a cloud covered it. No, folks, there was a lunar eclipse, full totality, right in front of my eyes as I'm driving. I was flabbergasted. It was one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
Yeah, and I told you, yeah, it was actually a lunar eclipse because that's something I knew was actually happening. So when you said the moon disappeared, I went, yeah, that was the lunar eclipse.
Oh yeah, and I was like, oh well, cool.
Yeah, exactly. So and I've seen a solar eclipse in totality. I didn't see when actually, you know, the last time we sort of did the equinox thing when we were at the cottage. I got to see the red moon or whatever the
blood moon.
The blood moon, yeah. So I got to see that, which I'd never seen before. And it was I had never seen a lunar eclipse. So it was worth doing because it was like, yeah, honey, you did see it. That's what you saw.
Yeah, clearly it's what I saw, which is absolutely awesome. And Poem 435, a.k.a. Dame Jennifer, has joined us and offered a true story that she was going to get a job at the 96 Olympics, where apparently this bombing occurred, and it was going to be working concessions or some shit, she said, and her father, in one of his moments of clarity, forbid it on the basis that he had a bad feeling about it. She said it might have actually saved her life, so one of the few things that her father did right. We love you, Dame Jennifer.
Yeah, guys, I trust your instincts on a lot of stuff.
100%. That little voice in the back of your head, yeah. Listen to it because it's screaming for a reason.
Yeah, if it starts screaming at you, yeah, pay attention to it.
I've definitely learned that in my life. And another thing I learned is what the final product ended up looking like, very up close and personal, because when I was working on a construction project on UT's campus, I didn't know ultimately, because of when I stopped working on it and other things that were going on at the time, what the end product of where we had been building came to look like. But I ended up having to pick up a UT professor from that very location. So it was nice to see what the end result for that project had been with that company, even though I can't stand that company and et cetera, et cetera. This was a very interesting man because he is a professor of, I'm trying to think what the term is.
What kind of classes did he teach?
Well, that's what the physics. Science shit.
That basic, yeah.
That reactor thing I told you was the side of the building.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So,
it's in that kind of.
Yeah, nuclear physicist. Great.
That stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I believe he was a nuclear physicist, actually.
Yes.
But,
considering it was Oak Ridge, yeah, I'd say that's probably.
No.
It wasn't Oak Ridge?
UT.
Oh, was it UT? Well,
yeah. This
well, okay, just, okay yeah. Also, but also keep in mind that, like, UT and Oak Ridge are what, like, it's like, what, like, half an hour or something between the
at
two
at best.
Yeah, exactly. So we forget that Oak Ridge is like right here, right?
So, I don't forget. I drive by the gate every time I come home. Well,
yes,
through
because anytime you try to drive on I-40,
oh my fucking god, I cannot stand it anymore. I'm gonna just start driving back roads for the sheer lack of stress it causes due to the fact every time I turn around, there's doing some kind of construction on the interstate, or worse, assholes are colliding with each other because they don't know how the fuck to drive. And it is really screwing up my day. So I'm truly just thinking about mapping an all back roads route to go into the city. And that way I'm not stressed out by the time I get there.
Yeah. Well, and yes, I think.
But I will tell you one thing that helps with my stress when I work on Fridays, especially because I'm working after dark, which I don't often do. But, well, any other day of the week, I mean. But on Fridays, I love the fact I have this little disco light that plugs into a USB port, which I have a port in my car that the only thing this is good for is using for this light. But it's an awesome little stroby disco light, and my riders go fucking bananas for this thing.
Well, yeah, and also when we do a proper rideshare radio,
which
right?
we did last
we
night,
we did last night because you were in town, and so when we do a rideshare radio, one of the sort of the things that we do with you're usually pick the passenger who because of like length of time or whatever, just the vibe.
Well, it's vibe, it's length of time, it's this and that. Yeah, yeah. I'll ask passengers, you know, hey. What's your favorite song and who does it?
Yeah.
And it actually led to this great encounter that I had with a girl. And it was funny because she was probably between like 20s and 30s and was talking about how she had gotten a Moving Pictures concert tee from a thrift store. And her dad was jelly because it was his size and she wouldn't give it to him. And she was saying how she was really into Rush lately. And I was like, oh, I've got the perfect song. So I had Phone Boy play Roll the Bones. And she was absolutely overjoyed. She thought it was the greatest thing. I gave her some ducks for marketing purpose so she could give them to her friends. And they could scan the little QR code on the duck butt and check everything out. Yeah. Hopefully they got a chance and they're listening at some point. Because she was an awesome... Her energy was just so awesome.
Yeah.
But... people, when they get in my car on Fridays and I've got my little disco light going and Phone Boy is doing rideshare radio and we're just, the energy is there. It's bumping. It is so much fun. And
we had a, last night was really great.
Last night was great.
Yeah. We had Lauren and Spencer popped in briefly. That was,
they did.
Yeah. We had all kinds of rent. We
even played a cover that Spencer did.
Oh yeah. That was actually fantastic. Yeah. Of a song that was played and Cotton Gin had made me aware of it in the back channel. And yeah, the next thing I know, Lauren and Spencer show.
It was
hello.
Fabulous.
Yeah. So, we tend to hang out on Friday nights, you know, kind of, you know, sometimes we go a little late. Sometimes we don't. It kind of depends on the crowd, depends on what we got going on. And yeah, there was, but here's the thing, you know, why we continue to do this, right? I think I've identified an issue that I think we all have in this and that we all have, but really haven't articulated is, we sort of identified it when we were looking around here where we live and we kind of realized there's no community here. I mean, I don't know my neighbors. I've never, I mean, the person who literally, the only reason I know her name is because her mail has accidentally showed up at my on my doorstep. I've never actually, despite seeing the woman several times because her parking spot is next to ours, I've never actually spoken with her, and she just kind of doesn't say anything and is whatever, you know, whatever she's doing. I don't care. But I think we know, I don't think we know very many people in here at all. And certainly not, you know, and of course we're also like, you know, and they rent out the place next to us.
Often. Yeah, but truly, this the Lotus chat or whatever we call it is truly a community because we do things that communities do. We all get together at least once a week, mostly. You know, we've had members who've needed a helping hand, and people have reached down deep and given what they could to further that cause. You know, we have talked to and even visited some of the community members we have here.
Well, exactly. But the whole reason we do it is because there's just not enough of that in the world, right? This is part of our, you know, this is our effort. It's like, hey, you know, it's something, right? Let's do, you know, and music's a communal, it's one of those experiences. It's a communal experience. You're listening to it together, right? It's, we all might be doing our different things doing it, but at the same time, we're together and yeah, we're sort of tied together by the fact that we're kind of listening to the same playlist and there's a, you know, there's a channel there, right? And I've been, there's, and if I look at my, you know, what I've been doing as a person, I've been building communities all my life. This shouldn't be a surprise to anybody that, yeah, you know, I'm kind of looking at what I'm doing now and I'm going, okay, I'm not trying to build the biggest community, but I'm trying to build something, you know, that, hey, that, you know, that, and that's part of what I'm thinking about is what, you know, what's the community of people that are going to gather around it? Because yeah, that's the thing that's important to me. And that's, and honestly, like, you know, when we talk about the, you know, the Adam Curry stuff, that's the part that affected me the most was what the impact it had on the community. That's, and that, because that's what matters to me, right? And that's always what's mattered to me is the community. And that's, you know, so, you know, it's not that I'm, you know, that I think I'm, you know, I don't know that I'm like the end all be all and all of this stuff, but you know, I don't know. Somebody's got to have, we got to do something, folks.
Well, and we are, you know what I'm saying? Like we party much like I party in my car on Fridays and everybody thinks I am the coolest Uber in the city, admittedly. We party here. We call it Studio 33. We have a great goddamn time. We also do it during Rideshare Radio. But I think it is time for us to toast and jam.
Well, I'm a bum in the sun, and I'm having fun, and I know you know I got no special plans.
Special plans!
All right, so it's time for where we remind you to weigh in on our topic this week, which is that food, cuisine, whatever, that food you eat when you've had that kind of day, right? And you know the kind of day I'm talking about. It's the day where you text me Romo's.
That's right.
That's the kind of, yeah, it's that kind of day. So whatever kind of food that is, right? Let us know. Call or text 253-237-3321. And you know, now I think it's time to know what's in the oven, honey?
I'm making like actual food that's cooked.
We're going to Denny's?
I hinted at it. I will confirm, thanks to Bemlet, he inspired this. I hope you're happy, sir. We are having meatloaf and mashed cauliflower for dinner. I roasted the cauliflower earlier. The meatloaf is in the oven. It's going to turn itself on, cook, and basically be ready to rock by the time I come downstairs during post-production to do the dinner thing. But it's going to absolutely be so delicious. It's like
an orgy in my mouth, and everybody's coming.
Oh, it's an orgy. Got it.
So, okay, so we got a couple of stories here from Toast and Jam this week. So, I believe we were sitting in the green room, on Sunday last week or something, right? And we were talking about, and you were in kind of, you were not in the most happy mood. And so we started talking about, you know, how do we change that? And I've always one of the things I've noticed about being with you is, you tend to be inspired by food, right?
I've often said food speaks to me.
Food speaks to her. And it's one of the things that I get such a kick out of what she's doing that I help her too, right? I mean, oftentimes when we're
good at it too.
Yeah. So like you start working on something and at the very least I'll go in and start like cleaning out the sink and, you know, kind of putting things, you know, kind of getting things prepared for what you're, you know, the debris from what you're making. Right. So I share your path, you know, and I get to enjoy your passion, right, at the same time, right, because I'm helping you, you know, again, you know, even with the dish that, you know, one of the dishes you made this week, for example, was this It was supposed to be what? This was the
Oh my gosh, let's see. Okay, start with the fact I made I can see it in my Oh, I know what it was.
Yeah, it was
I made a red snapper.
It was the one after that.
And then it was supposed to be a copycat honey sesame chicken from Panda Depression.
Yeah.
Oh my fucking God, that sauce was so wrong. Believe me, that's one of my favorite things. If I'm going to eat hot fresh garbage, I'm getting the honey sesame chicken all day long.
Yeah.
No, that sauce tasted nothing. Capital N for nothing.
Yeah,
like
and unfortunately, and the sesame seeds unfortunately caused an allergic reaction.
You blew up like a freaking sniffy.
Yeah, yeah. But okay. But here's the thing. Like, and even in that process, because making that sauce, we were kind of, you know, because you were trying to do something, and I was trying to.
Oh,
help
I was
you
beyond
this.
Frustrated yeah, though were... because you had to make a different sauce to make that sauce, and it was a lot of hoops to jump through for a very subpar dish. Yeah. Not to mention, I was having my hands assaulted by hot avocado oil that I was attempting to fry this lightly dusted, well, it wasn't even dusted, like, I don't even want to talk about it. It just was a bad dish. It got thrown away, the recipe, that is. If I don't like the recipe, it gets thrown.
Yeah. So, anyway, the point is, and all of that, so I learned stuff through this process, and I'm not, you know, and here's the thing, I don't think I've mentioned it on the show, because you asked me a question one time, so where did I learn to cook? Well, my mom taught me how to cook eggs, and I basically figured out the rest of it on my own, right?
Uh-huh.
That's pretty much, because that's as much as I learned, because, yeah, unfortunately, it's one of the things I've had to learn very early in life was to be self-sufficient, so I kind of through trial and error and watching other people, that's kind of how I figured out how to cook. So I'm learning to cook, and I'm sharing the thing. But anyway, I think where this kind of got into this is where it gets kind of funny, because you needed cheering up, and I said, well, honey, go. And she weren't feeling that inspired. I said, honey, go expose yourself.
I had to figure out something to make for dinner, but I was having trouble because I wasn't really inspired to, you know, I wasn't thinking about what protein, you know, can I make something out of?
Yeah, exactly. So what I told you to do is go expose yourself to the grocery store. You'll figure it out.
Which of course my reaction to which became, right, I hope you have bail money, because if I go exposing myself to the produce, it's going to get ugly. There's going to be police involvement. The manager's going to be like, ma'am, please step away from the cucumbers. We can't resell those now. So essentially, that's how that all started. And yeah, what came of it was the Cajun red snapper dish that I made, the mock honey sesame chicken. Like I said, the meatloaf, it was inspired by the Bemlet conversation, because somehow we got into the conversation of meatloaf in the chat like a week or so ago.
Yeah. And honestly, like, yeah, you make pretty good meatloaf, honey. I mean, even with the, you know, with the restrictions that we have to kind of, that we have, I mean, it still turns out really good. I mean, we use pulverized
pork grinds instead of breadcrumbs.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. And if we want ketchup on it, I mean, we actually have like,
We have sugar-free ketchup.
Yeah, we actually do. Yeah, we have the Primal Kitchen stuff, yeah. Actually. It's pretty.
But I actually put tomato sauce on the top to keep my meatloaf moist.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's...
No, it's delicious.
Exactly. So we've done this. But yeah, so I know that's going to be good. And I'm very happy about that.
I'm not happy about, though, is this fucking environmental science. If y'all are on the dong, you must have seen the post. I posted... No, you posted, I'm sorry, at least one, if not two pictures, I'm sure you will repost, of questions that were asked on the chapter I was working on for my environmental science. It was one of the grossest, most propaganda-based things I've ever seen. And it's talking about lowering your carbon footprint. And Phoneboy is actually going to be posting it in the chat. And...
There'll be a link to it in the show notes, by the way.
Yeah, this way I can get the verbiage correct on this, because the questions that were asked, the average consumer can reduce his or her ecological footprint the most by eating less meat and dairy products. Fucking excuse me, what? Are you joking? I'm like, no, absolutely not. And then we have, it's more energetically efficient for us to eat more plant-based foods. No. I know is a complete sentence. And had I thought about it, I was going to grab the Rev Horton Heat clip because eat a fucking steak. Eat a steak.
That's right. But yeah, this, yeah, not just, I mean, we're, okay, so yeah, we had to go through, there was, yeah, they, for one of your questions, they had you go to like a website or something that you.
Oh, no. Yes, but no. You're talking about the test I had to take where I had to go to a website. And mind you, I'm trying to remember if, I think it was actually Tigger I have to credit with this. It was beautiful. So the question made you go to this website to figure out your carbon footprint. And my answer, first and foremost, because I'm like, this is not anonymous. First of all, the information this is asking for is nobody's fucking business. You don't need to know how many people are in my home. You don't need to know how often I fly, how often I, or how far I drive to work, or what my diet consists of. None of your fucking business, period, dot, have a nice day, okay? So Tigger's answer, because this, of course, is environmental science, is the greatest comeback to this instructor. Because I did. I told her in the question, I refuse to do this and am willing to take the loss of credit for the question because I feel this is an invasion of privacy. This is not completely anonymous. Because of the massive amount of bleed that browsers have, you're definitely able to be tracked by some three-letter agency and hounded by your anonymous answers on this website. I'm like, nope, hard pass. I'll take the zero. And Tigger's response was, you know, you're talking environmental science. I said, yeah. She was like, so you're trying to save the planet, but you want me to use the energy it takes to look up this website and then find out how bad your own carbon footprint is. Don't you think that's a little hypocritical?
Yeah.
And I thought that was a great comeback.
Well, and it's also, it's like, if you eat, okay, but now I went through the exercise just to sort of prove how bullshit it was. Because they said, oh, you eat meat all the time, but it's, everything is local. I said, well, you're consuming 7.5 times the earth. I'm going, that's just bullshit, right?
Hugely.
Because okay, where do we get our beef? Well, we get it from Randolph Farms, right? They're about an hour away from us, right? We get our chicken from people that live about 30 minutes away from us, right? And I'm going, okay, and you know, and again, like, how is that 7.5 times the fucking what the earth is? This stuff is bullshit, folks. I don't understand how anybody even buys it. They don't think about any of this shit, and so it's like the entire thing is bogus, and it's trying to shame you into not. It's basically shaming you into quote unquote not eating meat, even though pretty much, anyway.
Yes, clearly, propaganda, which is why we wanted to rant about it because it's not going to get any butter. Butter. It's not going to get any butter. It's not going to get any better, but. I know it's also, it has an end date, thankfully, because beginning of December, I'll be done with that class. And so far, I'm holding a solid grade, so I'm not worried about my little stands of integrity that I take on certain questions, etc. But I think this last thing before we hear from our pedal heads on what their go-to cuisine is, tell us about the match that missed it by that much.
Yeah. So, I get up, you know, at some point in the middle of the night to use the facilities as it were. And sometimes it's a little more than just an unhydration that needs to occur. And so the way we freshen the air, after that activity is to strike matches. Well, I was striking a match. The sulfur, it flew up and hit the corner of my eye, and had I been, you know, a centimeter one way or the other, that could have easily gone in. A hot ember of sulfur could have easily gone into my eye. And in fact, it
easily bordered your tear duct for sure.
Yeah. So it hit me
you have a scab and it formed a blister that popped.
Yeah, exactly. So I was just missed it by that much. Like, wow. I mean, talk about a guardian angel moment.
That would have definitely been a trip to a medical facility because that would have been a whole lot more then we could have handled it.
Yeah, exactly. It's just kind of, I feel the scab there now and it doesn't really hurt. But
the lesson here, folks, don't use books of matches, use wooden box of matches.
Exactly. So I think with that, it's time to let our pedal heads weigh in. What do you think?
I personally think
the world needs a wake up call. We're going to phone it in.
To 253-237-3321, we asked today, what is your go-to cuisine when you're having an absolute cunt of a day?
Okay, can you read?
We have a weigh-in from Mama.
I'm going to let you read it because I can't read it.
Says, favorite comfort food for a cunt of a day? I have several, but I'll pick taco salad. I use canned chili instead of refried beans, which have no taste whatsoever.
We call it the refried beans are baby poop is kind of the way that it's.
I don't hate refried beans.
No, I don't
beans.
Either, but some people.
Like, you got to add an ass load. You got to add the amount of salt that Dame Jennifer added to her soup yesterday
probably.
In order to make refried beans taste good.
Yeah, well, whatever works. I mean, that's a great one. All right, so we have.
It is a great one. Thank you, Mama.
Okay, so I think we're going to play this one right here. And we'll see what we got.
Hey, Phoenix, fun boy. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Merry Saturday. Yeah. When it's just been one of those days, what's the go-to meal? Well, I assume that it was one of those good days where you and the family and stuff, you get back and just had a good day, good weekend, whatever, and you're getting back, and like, oh, yeah, dinner sort of deal. And you budgeted for grabbing some food. So assuming that, it's going to be there's a burgers and fry place that's around in our area, and so we usually grab that often. If not, we'll go get some like super burritos, just some large burritos, and usually have chips at the house, so burritos and chips and stuff. Yeah. And then it's just me and my lonesome that the wife's gone out for the night or whatever, like just working or whatever, or gone or something. I'll usually just go grab the thing of canned chili with beans, yada, yada, I don't care, and add some refried beans and cheese and chips and chili and hot sauce and beer and call it. So, yeah. I guess if it's been one of those days, no matter how you define those days, it's always the same. Yeah, I'm grateful for the days. So, because even if it's those days meaning negative, it's still a day, man. So, celebrate it. Anyway, love you guys. Stay dangerous. And whether or not it's dead on the inside, when you're bringing the light, it's still dead on the inside. What am I? Anyway, love you guys. Stay dangerous. And give a hotty hotty.
Caca! All right. Well, thank you. But yeah, fucking burritos. Yeah, I could
love burritos.
Yeah, that's one thing I do miss from that. But from those times. But we had some other weigh-ins here that you wanted.
Dame Jennifer weighed in saying, "I'm too lazy to call in tonight, but my go-to during cooler weather is beef stew or some other warm, chunky, savory super stew type thing." Yeah, now you're gonna make me have to make some damn beef stew because that's got my brain thinking.
I think we might even have some stuff left over.
I don't know.
We're
going to have to look in the freezer for sure. But Tigger weighed in asking, does liquid count as cuisine? Alcohol in copious amounts. We appreciate and can definitely relate to that. And Weirdo so far has had one of the best answers. And it also came in through the back channel. He said, that go-to comfort food? I'll have to think about that. I usually turn to drugs, not food. Yeah. Smart ass.
Yeah. Don't like the drugs, but the drugs like me. All right, anyway.
But yeah.
Yeah, all right. And I'll have to play that in Studio 33. All right.
Yeah, you will.
Okay, so we have some that came through the front door. You get the back door request. I get the front door request right
this
here.
This is sounding kinky. This is not the after party.
Yeah, that's right.
It's too early for that damn question because almost everyone is still hungover from last night. As such, Hi, today's question of the day is, what's your go-to cuisine when it's been a cunt of a day? Sky, Dino Nuggies. Chase, if it's fucking bad, sushi. Rain, hot wings or ramen, or none if that day was rotten. Key, soup. Alicia, get some Shin Ramu, add in some ginger, garlic, egg, chicken, and cilantro, cooking my way of decompression. Question mark. Berg, sleep. Sai, I'll stick with Indian. Butter chicken with lots of rice. Sai also. Damn it, Berg. Chase, oh man, a butter chicken with tikka masala. Yum! Berg, what? Sai, butter chicken and paneer tikka masala. Chase, mm-hmm. Sai, can you eat sleep? Chase, so yummy. Berg, probably. Alicia, if you can find it, I recommend trying Lamas. It's goat curry, literally and figuratively, with some naan or roti. Rat. Whiskey mac and cheese. Kiki. Ham and cheese sandwich with chips in a sandwich. Dia. A whole ass chicken with a beer up its ass. Sorry. Ass chicken exists? Sadly enough, people are asleep. You know, if there's a part two, there's a part two. If not, you know what? Apparently ass chicken exists. Now shove a beer can up it. Love y'all. Take it easy. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. I'm going to go find some sanity in the bottom of the box of Cracker Jacks. Love y'all. Bye.
Bye. Thank you so much. Dear God.
Yes, ass chicken. Yes,
Dame Vemrose is truly, truly degenerate, and we would not have her any other way. We love that woman to bits and pieces.
Yes, we do. All right.
Especially for putting up with that damn husband of hers and brother-in-law. Those two get together. No good can come of this.
Yeah. Speaking of which, let's see.
So your question going out to all these idiots, including myself, is when you've had one hell of a day, one bitch of a day, one of cunt of a day, whatever you want to call it, what's your go-to? What's your go-to cuisine? And to be honest, when I've had that kind of day, I don't want to cook. So if I'm going to be responsible for cooking, it's going to be probably bachelor food of some sort, even if the family is there. Like shit on a shingle, just like some manwich on some buns, like Sloppy Joe's, maybe a burger. If we're going out, it's a burger. I want a fancy burger. I want it sloppy. I want it greasy. I want it messy. Fries or whatever your side is nice, but it's not the important bit. The burger is the important bit. I want a burger. I want a good burger. All right, guys. Have a good day.
Well, burgers are good.
Oh, hell yeah. And, yo, man, you were talking about some manwich. Oh, the fat kid in me was like knocking on the brain. I miss manwich.
Yeah,
I used to fuck up manwich on a new level.
Yeah, they had actually a high end kind of burger joint. I think it was in Wisteria Lane or in the town.
You find my shocked face.
Yeah, I know, kidding. I, for some reason, when he was talking about that, I was kind of thinking back to those places. But I realized I don't eat that shit anymore. But still, a burger though.
No, but. Come on, the smash burgers that we make.
Exactly.
Oh, so good.
Right, we have one more way in here.
Bacon.
Yeah.
Pretty much that is the go-to, and we know who offered that answer. Thank you so much.
Yes, exactly. So that was it. So unless we've got any other ones, I think it's this is where we got off. But wait, I guess you and I need to talk about. Well, we talk about
again talking about shit from the after party, getting off.
Yeah.
Christ.
No, but we're talking about talking about that go-to cuisine. Now, we tend to do... We
talk about the Romos.
We talk, which is Mexican, but I'm trying to think what I did before that. And I honestly don't know the answer to that because I didn't always have control over that. So I kind of just...
I never really had the... This is, you know, what I'm eating because I've had a cunt of a day. However, I will offer one of my favorite hot, fresh garbage snacks that I enjoyed before cleaning my diet up. I don't care what kind of macaroni and cheese it is, as long as it is a boxed macaroni and cheese and not the stuff that has the pouches of cheese. I mean bona fide broke ass 29-cent macaroni and fucking cheese.
Actually, you know what? You know what I can say is actually my go-to and having that kind of day. Yeah, is I still do my ramen and eggs thing, which is kind of like when
there you go.
Yeah, which is not which now I figured out a way to do that is with we using the angel hair paradise noodles that we get. Right.
They're called heaven made, but anyway.
Yeah, they're
hearts
they're,
of palm.
Yeah, they're hearts of palm. Yeah,
my son calls them paradise because he can't remember the hearts of palm part. He just calls them paradise rice. Or paradise
my only thing is I
think
kinda,
that's hilarious.
I just wish I could get the actual seasoning from the from the ramen packets.
We have tried to find it for purchase and cannot.
Yeah, no, they don't sell it separately. Sadly. I wish they did, but. Anyway, I can
Do
probably
even know how much money they could make if they did. Holy crap.
Yeah, that'd be some
Imagine like a 50 packet box for like $5, $10. Like, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
however, the macaroni and cheese thing, there's another caveat to that.
Yeah.
This is where it goes off the rails, but people who've tried it are like, oh my God, that's really good. So you get a single box of macaroni and cheese or two boxes, depending on how voraciously you eat. And you take the little, I think it's like 6 or 8 ounces maybe, of just tomato sauce from Hunt's or whatever your local grocery brand is or whatever. You make the macaroni and cheese according to the directions. Then you take and put the tomato sauce into the macaroni and cheese and heat it up. So that the macaroni and cheese and the tomato sauce is hot together, and then you put salt and pepper on it, and manja. It's delicious.
Exactly. So it is how, yeah. So however, yeah, I'm now starting to think about ramen. I think we probably, I need to get out of this segment because.
Dude, you're going to go from one beast to another because now you're hungry from listening to what everyone else's go-to cuisine is, and now we're going to get high.
I'll take a drink, and my name's Smoke Little Reef. You know, I like to smoke. Reefer, you know, I'd relax as many other things. A couple of doobies, you know, just to get you through the day and everything, but I do not freebase cocaine.
That's right. We are definitely not freebasing cocaine. However, Phone Boy is going to tell you about some benefits for some medical marijuana.
Yeah, apparently it reduces anxiety and depression, according to a federally funded study.
Smoke weed every day.
Now, medical marijuana was associated with significant decreases in self-reported anxiety and depression compared to before patients began treatment with cannabis, according to a new study funded in part by the National Institute on Drug Abuse. The observational study published this month in the Journal of Affective Disorders looked at 33 adults because, yeah, that got my attention, in Maryland with clinically significant anxiety and or depression over a 6-month period.
I'm sorry, you live in Maryland, probably close enough to D.C. where the anxiety wafts over.
Yeah, exactly. And so... So they evaluated them at baseline and then again after 1, 3, and 6 months from when patients began using medical cannabis. Significant decreases from baseline in anxiety and depression were observed, with mean scores dropping below clinically significant levels within 3 months of initiation, according to the study. Participants also reported sustained reductions in anxiety and or depression symptoms over the 6-month study period. Now, most patients chose THC-dominant cannabis products, and in addition to self-reported benefits to mental health, they also reported a decline in their perceived driving ability and an increase in feeling high. Well, no shit, Sherlock.
I just had the most interesting insight. So you've got these people who are self-reporting using THC in this study, right?
Right.
No. Follow my thought process. You go to apply for a gun. Have you ever used illegal drugs? Your name is now associated with a study that proves, yeah, you have. Good job.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so acute effects were dose-dependent, authors wrote. 10 to 15 milligrams of oral THC and at least 3 puffs of vaporized cannabis yielded the most robust reductions in anxiety and depression. Now, among participants, 3/4 said they had previously used marijuana, and just over 1/3 said they'd used cannabis within the past year. And at the time... And at the time of the study, medical marijuana was legal in Maryland, but the substance remained illegal for non-medical use. Now, the 6-person team behind the new study represents John Hopkins University School of Medicine, the John Hopkins School of Public Health, the University's Sydney Kimmel Comprehensive Cancer Center, and the Center for Alcohol Policy Research in Melbourne, Australia. That's a Motley Crue right there. A conflict of interest section of the report notes that some members have received funding or are currently working for companies involved in medical marijuana. Well, I mean, it's, yeah, of course they have to highlight that because, yeah, not that we don't run into that with like our food, you know, the studies of the food system. Oh, there's no gambling going on here when you just, anyway.
No, nothing to see here.
Yeah. In addition to NIDA funding, the project also received support for a pilot grant from the Lambert Center for the Study of Medical Cannabis and Hemp at the Thomas Jefferson University. Now, authors said that while findings of the new study were promising, controlled clinical trials are needed to further investigate the efficacy and safety of medical cannabis for acute anxiety and depression symptom management. Now,
more research is needed.
However,
why, you ask? Oh, because the FDA is never going to fucking allow this to go further than it has, because it's going to cut into the drug company's profits for all these anxiety and depression medications. If you can legally smoke the holy herb to do what these expensive death-dealing drugs are doing in place of it. Yeah, we know where this is going to go, straight in the toilet.
Yeah, I'm just going to let you read the next one here.
Yeah, it almost kind of falls into line, because is the THC percentage game rigged?
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
Walk into almost any dispensary today and you'll hear it. There's ones testing at 32%, or this one's testing at 32%. Bud tenders pitch high THC flower as if it were golden nuggets. Consumers rush to grab the jars with the highest numbers, and brands plaster the percentage like a badge of honor. In today's market, potency percentages aren't just a selling point. They become the entire identity of cannabis. But here's the problem. THC percentages is one of the most misleading and manipulated metrics in the industry. Consumers think it's the ultimate measure of quality. Growers feel pressured to breed for nothing but numbers, and labs are under fire for inflating results. The truth is uglier than most realize, and it's reshaping the future of cannabis in ways that could leave everyone worse off. Legalization brought cannabis into the mainstream, but it also reduced it to a math problem. More THC equals better weed. For new consumers, especially those used to alcohol's ABV scale, the biggest number on the jar feels like the safest bet. Why pay for flower labeled at 18% when a 32% strain promises almost double the strength? Well, veterans know better. Anyone who's smoked long enough knows a 17% strain can knock you flat on your ass, while a 30% bud feels overly underwhelming.
Or oddly underwhelming.
No, I said overly. I don't give a shit what the research says.
Okay.
I know it said oddly. I wanted to use the word overly. You gonna fight me for it? I didn't think so.
Fuck you!
But, all joking aside, okay? It's because the cannabis isn't a single compound. It's a whole ecosystem, with each element working together to create balance and effect. Cannabinoids, terpenes, and flavonoids play together to create the high. This is known as the entourage effect, and it often matters far more than the raw THC content. Still, dispensary buyers reinforce the fixation. Many often refuse to stock high-quality flower if it tests below 25%, no matter how flavorful or unique. Growers know this, and many admit that they feel trapped chasing numbers just to stay on the shelves. This, of course, causes growers to chase THC to stay on the shelves, even if the overall product quality is lower. Thankfully, not all growers are doing this.
Yeah, and this is, yeah, and I mean, this article was actually very long when I went through it, and it kind of came down to the fact that, there's different ways to slice and dice this, and yeah, the THC number is not the only thing, and this is why we always ask the guy, all right, what's the best you got here?
No, seriously, like if I find something that I know the strain of and it's good, yeah, I don't have to look at the percentage and question like, oh, is this better than this? But usually we'll ask our guy, like, okay, what have you tried, and which one is, you know, what's your TKO here? Because, I mean, BOTG is much better than
just trusting a manufacturer. Ask somebody who's toked it. That's why if you have, you know, if you've got somebody, and I'm not talking on the legal basis, who sells to you, I would almost guarantee you you're sparking that product with that person privately, more than likely, because you're going to make sure that your quality of your product is perfect before you pass it on to someone else. Just saying.
Yeah, exactly. Well, all right. I think we've gotten out of that segment. It's time to go to the tech tips.
Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again? Have you tried sticking it up your arse?
Yeah, well, I think we're getting tired of this damn topic, but it seems like it's in the tech news all the time. But this sounds like maybe something, maybe a step in the right direction, question mark? A global call for AI red lines sounds the alarm about the lack of international AI policy.
Awoga! Awoga!
Now, on Monday, more than 200 former heads of state, diplomats, Nobel laureates, AI leaders, scientists, and others all agreed on one thing. There should be an international agreement on red lines that AI should never cross. For instance, not allowing AI to impersonate a human being or self-replicate. How about...
Stop right there. You've already fucked that up. By the fact that somewhere out there is floating a news story about an AI being a recording agent. Or a recording artist, excuse me.
Yes.
But I digress.
Yes. Now, they, along with more than 70 organizations that address AI, have all signed the Global Call for AI Red Lines Initiative, a call for governments to reach an international political agreement on red lines for AI by the end of 2026. Signatories include British-Canadian computer scientist Jeffrey Hinton, OpenAI co-founder, Zaremba, Anthropic CISO Jason Clinton, Google DeepMind research scientist Ian Goodfellow, and others. Now, why does this feel like a regulate me so I can lock in my status as a top dog feel to it?
Feels like, why don't you just eradicate AI, problem solved?
Yeah, well, regulate me. This is how the incumbents lock themselves in. So this is what this feels like to me. But anyway, the goal is not to react after a major incident occurs, but to prevent large scale, potentially irreversible risks before they happen. Charbel Raphael Segeri, executive director of the French Center for AI Safety, and it said during a Monday briefing with reporters, and he added, if nations cannot yet agree on what they want to do with AI, they must at least agree on what AI must never do. Some regional AI red lines do exist. For example, the European Union's AI Act that bans some uses of AI deemed unacceptable within the EU. There is also an agreement between the U.S. and China that nuclear weapons should stay under human, not AI control, but there isn't a global consensus. And in the long term, more is needed than voluntary pledges. Nikki Elaitis, director for the global governance of AI at the Future Society, said to reporters on Monday, responsible scaling policies made within AI companies fall short for real enforcement. Now, eventually, an independent global institution with teeth is needed to define, monitor, enforce the red line, she said, or enough of us just need to fucking stop using it. Because if they don't use it, they don't have to pretend. Anyway, you don't have to worry about uses of AI when people just stop fucking using it.
I mean, we're going to keep saying it. AIisevil.org. Seriously, folks. This is not the future. This is going in the very wrong direction.
It's not the future we want. That's for damn sure.
For sure. And the way that we try to, you know, mitigate that is we keep doing this show. We keep doing 2.5 bends. We keep trying to open people's eyes to the fact that you've been hornswoggled, folks. You've been absolutely bamboozled. AI is not the future, and it is dangerous. And you know what else is dangerous? This massive, we're so fucking big we can censor anyone we want, because Microsoft has cut off some services used by an Israeli military unit. Shabbat Shalom. Microsoft has cut off some services to a unit of Israel's Ministry of Defense after an investigation found its technology had been used to conduct mass surveillance on people in Gaza. Brad Smith, president of the company, said using the firm's technology to conduct mass surveillance on citizens was a violation of its standard terms of service. I'm sorry, is Microsoft in the over in the EU also? Yeah. How do they get away with surveilling all of their citizens, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? But, oh, because the military for Israel is doing it in Gaza. Oh, we're gonna, you know, take away your services. Hypocrisy? I think maybe a little. But anyways, Mr. Smith said the decision, which was prompted by an investigation published by The Guardian, would not affect other work the company does with Israel. Oh, wanna bet? Microsoft's work with the Israel government has been a controversial issue, including within the company, prompting protests by employees. Last month's investigation by The Guardian, which collaborated with Israel-Palestinian publication Plus 972 magazine and Hebrew language outlet Local Call, found that a unit of the Israel Defense Ministry used the expansive storage capacity of Microsoft's cloud service, Azure, to create a giant trove of calls made by ordinary Palestinians that it had intercepted. The ability to collect, play back, and analyze communications with such breadth helped to shape military operations in Gaza and the West Bank, according to their investigation. Microsoft, which has responded to protests from staff over its work for Israel by firing some employees, said it launched its own review in response to the article. The company said it didn't access the content of its customers as part of that review, but found other evidence to support elements of the article, including consumption of storage capacity in the Netherlands and use of AI services. It subsequently informed the Israeli Ministry of Defense that it would cease and disable certain subscriptions and their services, including their use of specific cloud storage and AI services and technologies, according to Mr. Smith. The Guardian reported that the unit in question planned to transfer its data to a cloud platform sold by Amazon. Amazon did not respond to a request for comment. Right. This isn't just a huge fucking, what do you call it?
Shit show?
Well, that too. Major grandstand by Microsoft here. Like, oh, we're getting so much pressure by our employees. We have to do something. Let's disable the services to their military. Wow, that's not a pro-Palestinian position there, Microsoft. No, not at all.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's just, yeah, things are messy over there.
Dude, yeah. It's business, not personal. Yeah. When are people going to start realizing that?
Yeah.
If you're a company that, and this is where you can fucking get pissed at Amazon for what they're doing. Hear me out. Okay. If the Ministry of Defense is going to use Amazon's technology, you can't get pissed at Amazon because it's business, not personal. Any more than you can get pissed at Microsoft for the fact they were using their technology. The fact that Microsoft has decided to cease and desist on some of their features, I would tell Microsoft to go fuck themselves and find another solution if I were the ministry. That's just my position.
Yeah, well, anyway, I have no... like I said, I don't want to get involved in that. I just don't. I need to go to the junk drawer, though. Can we do that?
Humanity was incapable of solving even its most basic problems, like garbage, which had been stacked for centuries.
Yeah, and I've got a great story from Washington State here. This is bullshit. Washington is forcing speeding offenders to install GPS speed limiters. Yeah, so our nation's complete loss of freedom is for sure progressing on or ahead of schedule. Now, the latest example comes from our friends in Washington State, who is now forcing repeat speed offenders to install GPS-based speed limiters, joining a growing national trend that curbs how fast drivers can go, according to Echo Portal. Now, under the new law, anyone caught driving 20 miles per hour over the limit on highways or 10 miles per hour over on smaller roads must use the limiter if they want their license back. Now, the device works like the breath test locks used for DUIs, but instead of measuring alcohol, it tracks speed through GPS and electronically caps the car's top speed.
Right, because those electronic GPS monitoring things are so accurate. Just ask me. I do rideshare, and I deal with that all the time.
Now, offenders must keep it installed for at least 120 days or 150 if convicted of reckless driving. Now, drivers only get 3 temporary bypasses a month before the limiter locks them down completely. Refusing to comply means more penalties and longer suspensions. Echo Portal writes that lawmakers pushed the measure after 2023 became the deadliest year on Washington roads in more than three decades. I'm glad I got out of there before this happened. Yeah. With speeding behind a third of all traffic deaths. Maybe the phones that they're driving, that they're using while they're anyway, that's a whole different topic. Yeah. But it's like, maybe it's not just the speeding. It's the other stuff that they're doing while speeding. Like eating, like, I don't know, picking their nose, you know, fondling their slab. I don't know. But the bill is named after four victims killed near Renton by a repeat offender who had already been in two crashes earlier that year. Now, advocates say the technology will save lives, pointing out that Europe already requires limiters in all new cars. But critics see it as a dangerous precedent, the state taking control of how fast your car can move. Once activated, the limiter doesn't allow flexibility. Emergencies, wide open highways, or personal judgment no longer matter. Yep, pretty much. Yeah, you know, that this is why they want you on electric cars, folks.
Yep.
Yeah, so, yeah, fuck that. So I'm glad I don't live there anymore.
It's just gross. But, you know, so is this, because the UK announces mandatory digital ID plans.
You are being watched. The government has a secret system, a machine that spies on you every hour of every day.
This is disgusting. The United Kingdom is introducing a national digital ID scheme in an effort to crack down on illegal migrant workers. A government press release on Friday announced that the digital ID will be stored on mobile devices throughout the gov.uk wallet app currently in development, and will be mandatory requirement for adults to work in Britain by July 2029. Digital ID is an enormous opportunity for the UK. It will make it tougher to work illegally in this country, making our borders more secure, Prime Minister Keir Starmer said in the press release. And it will also offer ordinary citizens countless benefits, like being able to prove your identity to access key services swiftly rather than hunting around for an old utility bill. Wow, the propaganda. The digital ID scheme isn't finalized and will need to go through parliamentary approval before it can be enforced. A public consultation will be launched by the UK government later this year to receive feedback regarding how the digital ID service will be delivered, according to the press release. The announcement has sparked privacy concerns from civil rights groups, with Big Brother Watch saying the scheme would fundamentally change the nature of our relationship with the state and turn the UK into a papers, please society. That is exactly what I was thinking when I read this article. A petition against the introduction of digital ID cards has also attracted more than 830,000 signatures at the time of writing, citing concerns around mass surveillance and digital control. Yeah, they've already got CCTV on all of their fucking people around there. Now they have to tighten it down even more. So plans to introduce digital ID were announced in January, with the gov.uk wallet app initially pitched to give UK citizens the option to digitize their driver's licenses and make government-issued documents easier to access. Wow, they just fucking goats to the slaughter led them on this. Oh my God, what a smoke and mirrors campaign.
You should hear about some of the other stuff going on over there, but that's a different discussion.
Oh, it's just unbelievable. So the gov.uk wallet app is still in development and described as, quote, entirely optional on the government website. Yeah, for now. The new mandatory ID requirements. So hold on for just a second. Let's back up for just a sec. Yeah. Entirely optional. And the next sentence says the new mandatory ID requirements. Doublespeak. All over the place right there. The new mandatory ID requirements and focus on illegal immigration come amid growing public concerns around migrant boat crossings and mounting pressure from the anti-immigration right-wing populist party Reform UK. The UK currently has no citizen ID card and does not legally require people to carry photo ID such as passports or driver's licenses. Well, why don't you fucking start there instead of jumping straight to everybody has to have a digital ID? It's kind of going from birth to marathon, don't you fucking think? So the EU is planning to introduce a similar digital identity wallet next year for European citizens, residents, and businesses to prove who they are when accessing digital services, and a place to safely store, yeah, right, share and sign important digital documents. Yeah, absolutely, totally secure. No way it could be breached.
Yeah, but yeah, then some other stories I found is that, yeah, some of the, there, you actually have to do like fingerprints and face scans at some point to enter some of the European countries.
This is just another reason why travel?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, just say no. Yeah. I'm not subjecting myself. And you know what? It's time for the last call.
No, I'm not done yet.
Oh God.
All right, we're not done yet, but there are no more voicemails, but we do have a couple of last call and no die stories this week. So no entertainers that we care about died. So but we do have a story about YouTube, who will restore channels banned for COVID and election misinformation. So YouTube parent Alphabet has confirmed that it will restore channels that were banned in recent years for spreading misinformation about COVID-19 and elections. Alphabet says it values free expression and political debate, placing the blame for its previous moderation decisions on the Biden administration. Bullshit!
Massive, massive amounts of bullshit in that.
All right, here's this last. We got to do this last story. Is
oh yeah. Speaking of bullshit, this one's a Lulu, and it even comes from our local area because Bledsoe County deputies execute a search warrant at a Pikeville Sunoco. The Bledsoe County Sheriff's Office served a search warrant at the Sunoco gas station located within the city limits of Pikeville in Bledsoe County. Now, Pikeville is probably about 30, 45 minutes from where we are.
Yeah, it's like south. Yeah, it's down like 127, I think.
Yeah, it's actually where the orchard that I want to go to get some apples to make applesauce is.
There's a sign for a place in Pikeville on Peavine Road. I don't know why. I mean, it's just.
Yeah, I think it's called the Butter Dish or something like that.
It's a restaurant.
I don't know. Maybe because people, if they like happen to be traveling through there, they're like, hey, we saw this billboard and hey, there's the place. We're hungry. We should stop. But maybe that's the reasoning behind it. I don't know. Or maybe it used to be here. All I know is that this legal action comes after the sheriff's office received multiple complaints regarding illegal tetrahydrocannabinol or THC products being obtained by local students. Oh, brother. The Tennessee Dangerous Drugs Task Force assisted on scene with testing of multiple THC products
How did they test it? Oh, yeah, that stuff gets you high.
Yeah, no shit, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly how they were testing it. Field testing. Yeah, Bob, that shit's not legal.
Yeah, exactly.
The availability of these products to students will not be tolerated in Bledsoe County. We are committed to ensuring that illegal THC products are inaccessible within our county, and we will continue to work with our partners in law enforcement to stop their distribution, according to a statement from the Bledsoe County Sheriff's Office.
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
Brother, if you think those fucking kids don't have a dealer and aren't fucking token on the real deal, you are blind.
Yeah.
Well. Oh my God, this story aggravated me so fucking bad. I just can't.
Well, that's about it, really.
What?
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Fuck it. I gotta go.
Yeah, fuck it. We gotta go. We've had a great goddamn time here, but it is truly overtime now.
So fucking over this.
It is time for this to be over.
I got an idea to end all this bullshit.
Jordan fades back. Swoosh. And that's the game.
Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. You're cool. And fuck you. I'm out.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.